With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal: to help you score more fantasy points.
Welcome to the first of the season. There's going to be, I think, 17 more of these here at the Fantasy Points Podcast. It is the Injury and Waiver Wire Podcast at Fantasy Points, fantasypoints.com. My name is Joe Dolan, and if you'll remember last year, we had a great time. Well, not necessarily a great time, because talking about injuries isn't great, but if you're going to do it, you might as well do it well. So we're doing it with Dr. Edwin Porce, Dr. of Physical Therapy, our injury expert at fantasypoints.com. In my opinion, I think this is a fact. Edwin, I think you're the best in the space at, like, explaining things and showing actual research to prove this stuff. I mean, you're honestly invaluable to our team. You're always available to me with a text. I was hosting the game day show, and I wanted you to sing me sweet lullabies about Jerry Jeudy. And we will talk about Jerry Jeudy this week. But how are you doing, my friend? Unfortunately, there is a relatively lengthy list of injuries here that we need to talk about in week one. However, fortunately, it doesn't look like any of them are season ending.
Right. Absolutely. Well, first of all, Joe, I appreciate the kind words. I think you're fluffing my ego a little bit, because I definitely whiff often. So I appreciate that. But yeah, we definitely try to provide as much context to the injuries as possible, and always go with the process. But I'm ready to talk about these. Yeah, none of them look to be seen season ending. A few of them are season altering. So we can definitely get into that. Joe, we are vaxxed, we are waxed, we are ready to fantasy football transact.
Yes, we are. You can follow him on Twitter at FBInjuryDoc. Edwin, all right, let's talk about the big one. And unfortunately, I mean, this is one that a lot of our subscribers at FantasyPoints.com have feel the effects, because Jerry Jeudy was one of our favorite players to draft this offseason. That is so far down on the list of concerns for Jerry Jeudy. But I did see him tweet. I don't know if you saw this tweet, Edwin. He says, "I appreciate all the ankle donations, LOL.
I didn't see that, no.
Because, like, fantasy players, like, you know, and Bronco fans, sure, like, take my ankle. By the way, if you yell at a player for getting hurt, you are a jackass.
True.
And I don't want you listening to this podcast, but we will talk about players getting hurt. And when you saw the injury, this is what I was literally, I saw it on television when I was doing the game day show for SiriusXM. I texted you right away and I said, please, please tell me something good about Jerry Jeudy. And I was maybe a tiny bit optimistic, because I saw him actually kind of walk to the cart. To me, just as a heathen, that indicated there wasn't, like, a serious break here. And it turns out they did the x-rays were negative, he got rolled up on, but it is a high ankle sprain for Jerry Jeudy. What does this mean? What did you see on the film? When should we expect Jerry Jeudy to come back? And moreover, when he does come back, what is he going to play like?
No, these are all good questions. So I was actually in the middle of running some errands when this injury happened, and I was on the fly looking at what happened. It did look bad, Joe. It looked bad. His ankle turned inward. He had an inversion, sort of high ankle sprain high ankle sprain that you hate to see. I was not so certain that his deltoid ligament would be intact after the fact, but that's why observation is one of the lowest sensitivity, lowest value type of analysis you can give right off the bat, because what it appears to be is not always what it ends up being. But the fact that you watched him walk to the cart does actually give a little bit of insight. You're not wrong. Yeah. So there are some rules, sort of like an algorithm, that have about 99% sensitivity in terms of if you need to get an x-ray or not. One of the rules that you follow is, can they place weight on the ankle immediately after the injury? And if they can place weight on the ankle, then there's a pretty good chance that they aren't going to have some major fracture. So you were right. You were spot on. For a heathen, you were doing great. So now we're looking at confirmed Schefter 4 to 6 weeks. If we do look at the evidence that I sent everybody yesterday, you do notice that the most weeks that most skill players will miss for a high ankle sprain is 3. So I'm not sure when the Broncos bye week is. I'd have to take a look at what that is. I don't know if you know that.
Let me look it up right now.
So we're looking at this injury for Jerry Jeudy. Schefter confirmed, like I said, 4 to 6 weeks. There is a mode of 3. So there's a chance he could be back a little sooner than that. They're going to take their time with him. They need to let the swelling be controlled. They need to let the pain response diminish. They need to get his range of motion back. But it ends up being, here's the data that I'm talking about. 14% of cases miss 0 weeks. That's probably not going to be the case for Jeudy. 22% miss 1 week. 12% miss 2 weeks. A whopping 27% miss 3 weeks. And then it's about 10% that miss 4. So we're looking at that range that lines up with what Schefty says. And we usually trust Schefter. Now, it's going to be tricky. We don't know when they're going to bring Jeudy back in terms of if he's actually ready. I've mentioned this study dozens of times. There was a 2013 NFL study. The last time that they talked about these high ankle sprains, all 32 team docs in the NFL said, yeah, these are pretty nasty, gruesome injuries, but players can't come back on an average of around 15 days. However, they don't look to be themselves for 4 to 6 weeks. That's where that 4 to 6 also comes into play. The first game back, and this is based on my own research from 2016 to 2020, the first game back for NFL players coming off a high ankle sprain, there's about a 20% production dip in that first week. You saw it with Terry McLaurin. You saw it with Saquon Barkley and Alvin Kamara. You see it with all these players. They come back and their production just isn't the same. That's because they're trying to get back on the field, and this is a very slow injury to heal. So, moral of the story, what does all that mean, right? I feel like I'm just talking for no reason. You just got to hold Jerry Jeudy. Yeah. I'm not actively acquiring Jerry Jeudy. I'm not trading for Jerry Jeudy because the Michael Thomas situation, which is worst case scenario, it's not common, but it's also, I wouldn't say it's rare. It is possible for players to be playing on a bum ankle the rest of the year after this. And then something like the Michael Thomas situation, which, like I said, is not super common, but it does happen. So I'm not actively acquiring these players. This is a very volatile injury, but I'm just holding on to Jerry Jeudy. And I'm just going to hope that when he comes back, it takes him a couple of weeks, but he'll get his sea legs back under him.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's not the worst case scenario for Jerry Jeudy. He was absolutely eating in that game. By the way, he had 6 for 71, less than midway through the third quarter, which is when he got hurt. So, I mean, he was going to catch 10 passes in that game.
Right.
So
didn't he drop one?
He had 7 targets. I don't know if the one was a drop. I didn't see it, but he caught 6 of 7 targets. So hands were not an issue for Jerry Jeudy in week one. Let's go to the other one that occurred in week one. Ryan Fitzpatrick suffered a hip injury. 6 to 8 weeks, it looks like he's going to miss. He has already been placed on IR, and it is worth noting that, unless I'm mistaken, Jerry Jeudy has not been placed on IR yet, and the Broncos bye week, by the way, is 11. So you would hope he's back before then. Ryan Fitzpatrick has been placed on IR. Is this similar to Tua Tagovailoa? Is this similar to Bo Jackson? What happened to Ryan Fitzpatrick?
So they keep reporting it's a subluxation. So if we're going by the traditional definitions, what it means is that the hip came out of socket and then went back in on its own. So it didn't require any type of sort of traction. It didn't require the athletic trainer or the doc to put it back in, which is a good thing, because the longer that hip is out of socket, the more likely there is to be blood vessel damage and necrosis. Ugh. So basically dying of the bone. And that wasn't the case here. However, he did dislocate his hip. It's very similar to what happened to Tua, much less severe, very similar to what happened to Bo Jackson, but again, much less severe because it went back in on its own. That's not common. The hip is a very stable joint naturally. So it's not very common for it to come out of socket. So we're looking at 6 to 8 weeks. I would say that's probably the minimum for Ryan Fitzpatrick, that we're not going to see him probably come back to full form even through this year. Even when he does come back, he probably won't be as mobile. He probably won't be as confident on the hip if he does come back. We might not see Ryan Fitzpatrick for a long time. And if Washington isn't competitive, which it's pretty easy to be competitive in that division, I don't know how soon they're actually going to bring him back or if they'll rush him back. But yeah, this was a pretty significant injury.
Yeah, it's a shame for Fitz because he finally gets a starting job like to himself, and then you know he gets hurt right away in week one. That offensive line was crap, by the way.
Yeah, they are.
That was a bad performance by the team's offensive line. Another major injury that occurred in week one, and I know, Edwin, you say injury prone is a lie. It's a catchphrase that requires a lot more nuance to what you mean. And you've written about that, and I encourage you to check that out on fantasypoints.com. However, I'm sure one of the guys who challenges you the most in asserting that is Raheem Mostert, who has yet another injury. It's a knee cartilage. It looks like he's going to have to get surgery. The knee injury is reportedly going to cost him 8 weeks. At this point, I mean, for fantasy, unless you have multiple IR spots, I don't see why the hell you would keep Raheem Mostert on a roster. What's the deal with Raheem Mostert? What kind of insight can you give?
Yeah, so the original report, and I wish I can remember off the top of my head, was that he had, quote, chipped cartilage.
That sounds fun.
That's not really a diagnosis. I mean, if anything, it means that he might have bone chips floating around along with cartilage damage to the meniscus, which lines up with the 8 weeks. If he had like a true, what's called like a chondral defect, that would be pretty severe and pretty significant. So I think it might be on the minor version of what this cartilage and bone issue might be. So he's going to undergo surgery, get it cleaned up. Like, yeah, this is going to be an 8 week issue. Okay, Joe. So here's the thing about Raheem Mostert. He is a guy who hasn't been able to stay on the field. He constantly has connective tissue injuries. And I, for one, thought before this happened, and I put this in the chat, I think he might have a little bit of the Todd Gurley syndrome. And I wasn't totally off. This was likely something that was already bothering and pestering him. And we did see there were some reports in camp that he was out during camp. This is probably something that the game action just pushed him over the edge from. It's not something that is a great injury to deal with. Even when he comes back, there could be complications from this injury. I think the guy's like 29 years old. I just, unfortunately, I don't see him coming back and really flourishing, which will say a lot for my Trey Sermon teams. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. Tom Brawley's going to join me on the second half of this podcast, Edwin, and we will be analyzing that situation. So I hope you tune in, and I hope you guys out there, I hope you play Monkey Knife Fight. Monkey Knife Fight is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site on the planet. It is a daily fantasy sports operator offering a unique style of player props. One of the things we really love about MKF is that you simply don't have to spend all day analyzing salaries to create that one lineup that finally makes you a millionaire like other sites. The third biggest operator in DFS offers all the major sports plus UFC, golf, esports, soccer, and constantly adds new sports to the mix to help keep things fresh for their more than 200,000 users. Case in point, college football, it's here in fall of 2021, and we've heard rumblings, a couple of rumors here, of bowling, tennis, Edwin, even fishing. Here's how it works. Ooh. Number one, you pick a sport. Number two, you select a game matchup. Number three, you pick your fantasy contest, more or less rapid fire, stat shootout. Number four, you choose your buy-in. New users can use code FANTASYPTS. That's all capitals, FANTASYPTS, to claim an instant 100% deposit match up to $100. New users also receive a free $5 just for signing up. Head to www.monkeyknifefight.com and download the app on the App Store or Play Store. You can also find out more information on the Fantasy Points homepage. Edwin, you wrote a big article this offseason. You thought Saquon Barkley's rehab, based on everything that was reported, you're not in the building, was going just fine. The Giants were being cautious with him. The reports were, I don't know if he's going to be ready week one. Turns out everything progresses. He plays in week one. The usage suggests the Giants are being cautious. He played just 48% of the snaps. That is well below what we're used to seeing Saquon Barkley play. And the Giants got freaking boat raced. All right, that team stinks. But observation is part of the equation when you're looking at injuries. What did you see from Saquon Barkley a year removed from tearing his ACL?
Yeah, week one, 10 and a half months after the surgery, he looked good to me. He looked spry. He didn't look like Saquon Barkley of old, and that's not necessarily to be expected. And I said most of the offseason, we can say everything we want and look at all the research we want. When it comes to the Giants, we don't know what they're going to do. And this is what they obviously decided to do. I think a lot of the complication and confusion came from, is he going to be active week one? Is he not? Is he going to take his role week one? Is he not? And I don't think he was ever going to be inactive. That was never really in the cards unless he had a massive setback. But yeah, he was active. Like you said, he played 48% of the snaps. The upside is that Devontae Booker and Gary Brightwell, they, I think, made up the rest of the targets. And I think they only had like two total targets or one total target. I think Saquon had like three or four. So moral of the story here, Saquon looked like he was a guy coming off an ACL and meniscus issue. I do think that the Broncos were part of the reason he was bottled up as much as he was, and he just didn't have room to run. I did go back and watch that game. I mean, it was pretty ridiculous how quick I should screenshot at least like one of his runs where I swear there were like four or five Broncos surrounding him and there was like no offensive lineman around Saquon whatsoever. So I should screenshot
please
that.
Please do that. I'll tweet because it out. Because, like, I think it's so lazy to come out and say, like, oh, my God, he's not ready. I was like, dude, that team stinks.
Yeah, they're so bad.
And honestly, that, for me as a fantasy player, that's the bigger issue right now. That it's not the injury for Saquon. It's the team being so bad around him is the biggest issue, in my opinion. Right. Now, it was a tough defense, you know. Denver week one. Denver looks pretty spry, too, by the way. I know we talked about Jerry Jeudy, but, yeah, Denver week one, the good news is Saquon is healthy. The bad news, everything else. Monday Night Football, another guy who I actually thought looked good on his runs, but he didn't play a whole lot, was Josh Jacobs, who has a toe injury. What did you see from him? He was clearly, Saquon, I didn't see any obvious discomfort from Saquon. Josh Jacobs, Ed, when you watched that Monday Night game, which was really entertaining, he was clearly in pain in that game, but I thought when he was out there, he looked pretty good.
Yeah, no, he was clearly playing through some pain, which isn't unexpected. He downplayed the injury. I think it was on Friday or Saturday. He was saying, oh, you know, it's not that big a deal. I'm just taking a rest day. Then he had to be hobbled off to the sideline. They had to retape his toe. I mean, this dude's going to be playing through pain probably for the next few weeks. He was volatile and he did look good when he got the ball. He looked spry. He looked like he hit the holes hard. He obviously had the two touchdowns. And I know you can't do it like this, Joe. I really hate this type of analysis, but I mean, take away the two touchdowns, even take away one of the touchdowns. It wasn't the greatest. And I think that does have a lot to do with what the toe injury was bringing to the table on top of the fact that he was also sick apparently, just yesterday. So this was a really interesting performance by Josh Jacobs. I don't really know what you're going to get from him next week now, because this toe injury isn't going away necessarily, but it might be something that he can play through with the foot plate. So I would say that Josh Jacobs continues to be, for me, from a health perspective, a volatile play. But I mean, you probably don't have a lot better options than Josh Jacobs.
Odell Beckham was inactive on Sunday in his recovery from ACL injury. What differentiates Odell Beckham from Saquon Barkley?
Yeah, so Odell hadn't taken contact in practice. So what we know about that is that he obviously isn't confident on the knee yet. He might have had some complications post-operatively. He's older than Saquon Barkley. You know, he's not necessarily, you know, going to go to the nursing home. But in terms of NFL age, I mean, he's 29 years old. So it takes a little bit longer of a time. There's a big, big gap between 23, 24 and 29, 30. So that was probably part of what played into his recovery. I don't necessarily anticipate him to come in and have this full workload either. As a receiver, it actually tells you a lot because receivers have an easier time coming back from these injuries, but there was probably more meniscus involvement for Odell Beckham Jr. than we initially thought. So that means that he might be active next week. We're not 100% certain. He's 2 weeks behind in terms of full recovery compared to Saquon Barkley. He had his surgery 2 weeks after Saquon Barkley did. So it's one of those things that you have to sort of take it for what it's worth. I probably wouldn't use a lot of OBJ in my DFS lineups. He's probably not going to run as many routes. And to be honest, I don't know how he's going to look coming off of that. Like he's the one guy that I was concerned coming off the ACL because of his age, because of his history, because of everything that we know about him. I was a little bit concerned, and I'm still concerned in terms of soft tissue injuries if they ramp him up too quickly. Odell Beckham Jr. is a super volatile player right now, and I'm not acquiring him or trading for him.
Austin Eckler is the final one we're going to talk about. This one is bizarre. Like, I mean, we're talking about Austin Eckler all season. He's a first-round pick and all this. And then all of a sudden, he just doesn't practice on Wednesday and Thursday heading into the Sunday game. He's active on Sunday, but he doesn't get a target. He did run routes on about half of Justin Herbert's drop get backs. Did you see anything? This is somebody who has a history of hamstring problems. Austin Eckler is open about his history of hamstring problems. He's a real one. He's a good dude. What should we be concerned here?
I would be cautious. I know he had that goal line carry. I know he had that touchdown. Other than that, the dude didn't see a target. And I'm wondering if that has to do with how they were managing his load. I have to go back and look at how many snaps that he played too. But I definitely think they were managing how much he's doing. You alluded to it. He admitted in an interview just a couple weeks ago, like, yeah, my left hamstring still isn't as strong as my right one, and I don't know if it ever will be. So that's something that we have to take into consideration when it comes to Eckler. And what muddies the waters more is this new coaching staff. We don't know how they're going to use him, how they're going to handle the situation. Week one is still a small sample. But the fact that he was two do-not practices, two DNPs last week, Wednesday, Thursday, and then was limited again, this sort of capped volume could have been predicted. But again, you probably didn't have a lot of better options than Austin Eckler. Take away that touchdown again. I've done it twice now, and I say I hate it. But he wasn't necessarily a great asset to your rosters this week. And it's going to be telling. It's going to say a lot what his practice statuses are this week. And it's going to tell us a lot about where he is from a health perspective. But yeah, man, this guy is moderately volatile, at least moving forward, because the week one is when everybody should be healthy, right? Week one is when everybody should be practicing.
That's what I said about Mostert on our live stream. I'm like, if you drafted Raheem Mostert, he's never going to be healthier than he is now. And then, injuries are a part of the game, man. They're just a part of the game. And that's why you're part of the game. Follow him on Twitter at FBInjuryDoc. Make sure you check out his injury insights at fantasypoints.com. Now, I strongly encourage you to subscribe to fantasypoints.com using the code 21porous10, by the way, get you 10% off. But if you go to fantasypoints.com, you click on research and news, on the right-hand side, there's injury insights. It is a free feed of all of Edwin's injury, just quick little blurbs, Edwin. You can go down here and it's going to be your expertise and analyzing the injury impact. And, you know, Tom and I, this is something that is so important to us. Tom and I will talk waiver wire here, but Edwin, you just do all the injury insights on that page. Make sure you check it out. It is fantastic talking to you, my man. Hopefully we don't have to talk for 20 minutes next week, but it is always good talking to you.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. I'll try to cut down on the fluff. Okay. I'll try to cut down on the fluff.
No, it's not fluff. It's very, very useful information. And we're going to come back with a little bit more useful information. Tom Brawley will join me to talk waiver wire after the break. But first, we're going to have a word from our sponsors. We are back. Thanks for hanging around after a wonderful little segment with Edwin Porous. Unfortunately, when I get to talk to Edwin for 20 plus minutes, it means there's injuries to talk about. We don't like that very much. But now we're talking about how to deal with those injuries here. And we're with Tom Brawley of fantasypoints.com, and Tom does the waiver wire. Tom, you literally are working on the waiver wire article in real time watching the games on Sunday. So like you are, I mean, you're like on the ground floor of this. You're doing it as it happens. And then you can update it with insight, but talk about your process a little bit, because we're going to, that's what we're going to do. You are the waiver wire guy. You are updating this damn thing during the games on Sundays.
Yeah, week one is always the worst week for the article for me, because anybody that's read the article over the years at Fantasy Guru and now Fantasy Points, it's kind of like a living article. We kind of write it initially, and we keep updating it throughout, you know, all 18 weeks now. So the first week is always a brutal one. The 1 o'clock games end at 4. I start writing it. I didn't get done until about, 12:15 this week. I do the Thursday night, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Then I kind of hand it over to John. He puts the finishing touches on it. So that's kind of the process for it. So between Sunday and Monday, I was like working for like 22 of 30 hours in the, well, probably like more like 23 of 30 hours, and the other 7 were spent sleeping. So I'm running on fumes a little bit here today, but got a little bit of rest last night. Got to watch a good game there. They were trying to blow it as much as they could there, the Raiders, but they ended up pulling out at the end. So, it's fun to have football back. Not the waiver wire's going to be a little bit busy this week. Nothing too crazy, but we had some shenanigans coming from Kyle Shanahan, this week. So, it's an interesting waiver wire here right off the bat.
Yeah. By the way, Tom, I want to remind everybody that at fantasypoints.com, if you're a premium subscriber to fantasypoints.com, and you can use the code 21brawley10 to get that. This podcast is being released on Tuesday early afternoon. On Tuesday nights, we have a new live stream for premium subscribers. It's our projection show where our staff is literally going to, we're going to pull back the curtain and we're literally going to have a discussion. John, this guy's too high. John, this guy's too low. With reasoning, Wes Huber, Scott Barrett, Graham Barfield, obviously me and you, Tom, we're going to be on there, and it's just going to be a little bit of a peek behind the curtain and give you an early look at some of the lineup decisions you should be making. I think it's a really unique show in the fantasy space, so I hope everybody checks that out. And Tom, you and I will be in Discord for our premium subscribers today, answering waiver wire questions, fab budgets, stuff like that. What would you do in this situation? Would you drop this guy?
Our favorite question is the fab question.
Oh, I hate them. because Tom, I don't know how to handle fab budget. I just throw a number out there and I'm like, I hope
that gets it. Exactly. Every league is completely different. Playing some super competitive leagues where everybody shoots their wad, the first couple weeks, and then, there's more, maybe a sharper league where, people are kind of trying to spend their money throughout the season, and they're a little more conservative. So every league is completely different when it comes to that.
And I always feel bad when people ask, but it's a 25% situation, there are going to be people who blow 100% of their budget on Elijah Mitchell. I don't know how defensible that is, but Tom, let's talk about the waiver wire star. I effing hate you for picking him up. I was in the I was literally in the shower getting prepared for the game day show when you picked him up in our long-term league.
Literally 10 minutes before kickoff for the 1 o'clock. I was out walking my dog in our 14-team league. I'm kicking myself that I didn't do it in more leagues, but I figured the 14-team league was the most defensible to do it. And now he's the guy here.
Elijah Mitchell from San Francisco. What did you see? What kind of fab budget would you use on him? Is there a potential landmine here? Was Kyle Shanahan being really disciplinary for Trey Sermon and Brandon Ayuk? I mean, it was a bizarre situation. There was no indication from anybody before the game. At least Sermon was inactive. I mean, the Ayuk thing was bizarre. But there was no indications over the past couple weeks from any reporter connected with that team that any of this was even within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I saw some reporters on the beat saying, "Oh, this was in the then report it." Like nobody had any of this out there. It was completely blindsided everybody. So Mitchell's kind of the guy for now. He played well in the role. Mostert, it looks like he's going to be out about 8 weeks. I'm sure you guys got into that a little bit.
It was a perfect storm, by the way, because Trey Sermon was inactive, but Mostert ripped off 20 yards on his first two carries, and then, as Mostert is wont to do, ended up on the sidelines. I mean, so it was a perfect storm. This was just don't kick yourself if you weren't like Tom. We're in a 14-team deep league, so Elijah Mitchell was actually one of the most appealing options on the waiver wire. I mean, this is everybody loaded up on Mostert and DFS. I mean, Tom, it was a perfect storm here.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a perfect matchup as well. The Lions were, one of the worst in the league, and, he took advantage of it and, broke off the long touchdown run, got up over 100 yards. So, he's going to lead this backfield for now, but Shanahan, he's prone to, make changes and, use the hot hand in his backfield here. If Trey Sermon gets dropped in any of your leagues this week, which is probably a great possibility, and some of the lesser, not as sharp leagues, maybe your hometown leagues, he's probably going to be, he could be dropped in some of those. So I would go out and pick him up. I think Jamichael Hasty is even in the mix here, but, Mitchell is the guy for now, as long as he keeps playing well. So he kind of played in that, they played in a very similar system at Louisiana. It was a 6th round pick, kind of went under the radar. But, he's extremely athletic and is kind of a good fit for this running scheme, this outside zone running scheme. So, he's the guy for now. And, he's definitely the top guy out of all the positions here to be looking to add here, because, you know, anybody that's leading this San Francisco backfield has a great route to fantasy relevance.
Yeah, and so let's just put it this way, Tom. You're not closing the coffin on Trey Sermon.
Oh, God, no. No. I mean, would you be surprised in the next 3 weeks that he's the lead back here?
No.
I mean, I feel like Shanahan is, you know, using a heavy hand here with Ayuk and Sermon. Sermon played a lot with the starters during the preseason as well. So, would you be completely shocked if Sermon is the lead back after week two?
No.
He comes out and he's the guy. Like, I wouldn't be totally shocked. So, I think Mitchell's the guy for now, but this is going to be a week-to-week process with the San Francisco backfield.
This is going to be different. This is going to be different, Tom, than Ayuk. I think Ayuk, San Francisco probably needs Ayuk, you know, like Trent Sherfield, you know, ain't going to cut it. Like,
no.
But for Sermon, I mean, now he had, Elijah Mitchell had a great game. And I have a couple of little tidbits from Greg Cosell on Mitchell. In his, a breakdown of Mitchell for our NFL draft guide up at fantasypoints.com, which you could still buy for $25. The more I watched Mitchell, the more I liked him. And here is the kicker. Mitchell would project best in a foundational zone scheme. And I got a question on our Discord channel, and they said, does San Francisco run a foundational zone scheme? And I responded to the gentleman, and I said, San Francisco runs the foundational zone scheme, Tom.
Everybody is copying it. You know, it's trickled down. Yeah, I think in Louisiana, basically, from stuff I was reading, that their coach, was picking Shanahan's, brains, like watching video, and, they were kind of emulating his offense a bit whenever Elijah Mitchell was running in it. So, he is the zone running game right now.
So, yeah, he's the big guy on the waiver wire, Tom. Just another couple names out there. Check Cordarrelle Patterson's positional eligibility. I got to be honest, watching that game, and it was, Atlanta got dominated. It was, but they did run the ball well in the first half. Tom, I thought Cordarrelle Patterson looked better than Mike Davis.
Yeah, and Gallman was a healthy scratch. I mean, that wasn't totally
not
surprising.
No.
Yeah, since he's just new to the offense. But, he could carve out a little bit bigger role here. I want to get on your guy here from the Eagles, Gainwell.
Oh, Gainwell.
I mean, he's a guy, if I miss out on some of the top guys here, he's definitely in the mix. And that was even a terrible game script for him, and he was excellent. I mean, they were leading that entire game, and, we're thinking the Eagles are going to be a 500 team, maybe worse. So, better game scripts are likely coming his way in the future.
Yeah, so, by the way, he was exclusively the hurry-up back. Boston Scott didn't play a snap.
Yeah.
Gainwell was in the 2-minute drill. He was out there. Miles Sanders looked great, by the way. But Gainwell, he was excellent, Tom, in pass protection.
Mm-hmm.
And as a rookie running back in his first game, I mean, he's out there. He's somebody who's very interesting. James White, 33% rostered on Yahoo.
That better be up over 50%.
I mean, he's just did exactly, especially since Stevenson and Harris both fumbled. He did exactly what you would want to see. One more I just want to ask you, Tom. What did you think of the Baltimore backfield last night in the game?
Oh, I want Tice on. I mean, Latavius Murray looks absolutely cooked. I mean, I know he was playing the pivotal snaps down the end. I don't think they have complete trust in Williams right now, but as the season goes on, I mean, Williams had, he looked way more explosive. I think he's the ascending player. Murray is the descending player. I mean, it might take, some time for that.
And Murray's going to have a role.
It's going to be a 50-50. It's going to be, they're going to use, it's just going to be kind of a 50-50 split. But I want the more explosive player, the guy that's ascending, not the descending player here. Guy couldn't even make the roster for the Saints. So, I think they're both going to be kind of that, RB2, RB3 fringe, but, Tyson Williams has more upside here going forward, in my opinion.
If you need to replace Jerry Judy, who we talked about with Edwin, who we expect
to... Oh, we're not even going to talk about the Texans backfield? I mean, Mark Ingram's going to get 30 carries a game going forward.
Guys, here's this. You and I were talking about this when we were going through our market report. The sucker bet of all sucker bets is using Fab to pick up Mark Ingram.
Get on our Discord, after, your Fab runs. We want to hear the most outrageous Mark Ingram bid out there this week. I'll be very curious. I'll be curious if anybody blows like over 50% of their budget on it.
I would rather pick up Cordarrelle Patterson than Mark Ingram. I'm dead serious about that. Larry Rountree, by the way, looks like the backup to Austin Eckler. If you're interested in that, he was pretty much, I think that's going to make Hanson happy because he called that all off season. All right, Tom, let's go to the receivers. If you're looking to replace Jerry Jeudy, let's just start easily with Denver. The guy consistently gets disrespected. I mean, Tom, every time he plays, Tim Patrick puts up numbers. Every time. And that was among, if not the single best game I saw Teddy Bridgewater play in the NFL.
Oh, he's going to get the ball to his receivers, too. I mean, we saw in Carolina last year, he supported three wide receivers last year. So, we're talking about Tim Patrick here. I mean, KJ Hamler, he might have he has the bigger upside out of, I think Tim Patrick week to week, he's going to be your reliable wide receiver three. You don't have to really sweat it too much. Just plug him in there and, he's not going to kill you. Hamler's going to be, he's going to have the wild ebbs and flows, but, it was interesting at least that Jeudy was kind of the guy in the slot, in week one here. I would think, and it was a great spot for him. I mean, Bridgewater was feeding him the ball there. I would think that Hamler kind of slides into that spot. So maybe KJ gets a little bit more consistency, but, he's always kind of been the shot play guy. He missed that long 50-yard touchdown pass. We're Penn State guys. We're texting her. There's KJ.
Oh, he was wide ass open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it wasn't the easiest catch. It was kind of – he kind of had to turn his shoulders to adjust to it, but there was literally no defenders around him, and he couldn't haul it in. But, bigger days are ahead for both of these guys. How long did Edwin say we could be looking at a Jeudy absence?
Well, Edwin actually leans to the shorter end, the 3 weeks. But, there's a chance he's not 100% when he gets back, so maybe they wait to get him 100%. Who knows? Tom, another guy, if you're not looking just at the Broncos, go back and look at Sterling Shepard's game logs. I mean, he is the only guy who did anything for that Giant offense on Sunday in that absolute crap fest against Denver.
Yeah. It's six. I have it in the article. 6 catches in 9 of his last 13 games. So, he actually scored a touchdown this week too, and made a big play. Racked up some yards after the catch, which usually isn't his MO. But he's a 40% owned guy. We were talking about James White. That's if he's not owned up over 50% of leagues, I don't know what's going on here. Devontae Parker is in the same deal here. He kind of got disrespected all summer. He led them in targets. Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case going forward. He's kind of the Mr. Reliable in that offense. They're both kind of, they're very much different players, but they're kind of the same. Like when the going gets tough, it's third down. I'm going to go to my most reliable guy, Devontae Parker, Sterling Shepard. I think they're both kind of similar in that way. So they should both be picked up and, owned in over 50% of the leagues after this week.
Yeah. By the way, Tom, we can't talk about everybody on the podcast. We're not going to give the whole article away, but if you subscribe to fantasypoints.com, the week 2 waiver wire, it is one of our premier article on the site, quite frankly, during the season. There's more guys to talk about, Nelson Aguilar, the Cardinal guys.
Two real guys that didn't do anything in week 1, but, all the peripherals kind of say big things might be coming for them. I mean, MVS, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, he kind of got pulled at the end of the game with the starters. I mean, it was Lazard and Cobb at the end of that game playing with Jordan Love. He saw 8 targets. It looks like he's kind of firmly the number 2 receiver here. And we're always trying to get pieces of that Packers passing game. They're not going to be this terrible all year. Hopefully that was just a one-off against the Saints. And the other guy playing Thursday night, I'm going to guess he might be the Thursday night special for John Hanson and myself on the program is Dyami Brown. He was the starter. He played across from Terry McLaurin. It was an ugly, Fitzpatrick gets hurt in the second quarter there. It just kind of threw the entire offense out of whack. But, the numbers look like, he could be something here in the next couple of weeks here. So, two guys that probably are going to go under the radar on your waiver wire pickups, but would be good stashes for you going forward here.
For sure. And then Jalen Reagor, by the way, six catches. Talk about, you know, like the Eagles come out and Quez, and I loved Quez Watkins, the scripted plays at the beginning of the game. Tom, Quez Watkins caught three passes on the first three plays of the game, doesn't see a target. Meanwhile, Jalen Reagor ends up catching six passes and scoring a touchdown there against Atlanta.
Yeah, he looked pretty good. I mean, the entire passing game looked pretty strong. Maybe it's with the going against the Falcons defense, but we'll see this week. I mean, that 49ers secondary looked awfully shaky, and they just lost Jason Verrett. So, could be a good spot. I want to drop a little more because, I mean, we're in the charitable mood here. It is week one. We'll save a lot of this stuff for the article going forward. But Cedric Wilson's another guy. Michael Gallup goes down. He's probably going to be out 3 to 5 weeks. They didn't use any other receivers besides Cooper, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and Cedric Wilson. So he's going to be kind of locked into that big role. And they threw it 58 times. This is going to be an offense that throws it a lot. Yeah. So if you're looking for just like a plug and play for a couple of weeks, you're not too satisfied. Or maybe you just lost Gallup. Wilson is certainly a guy. He's not going to kill it, but he should be good for 4 or 5 catches for 50, 60 yards.
Tom, you need to come prop up on Thrive Fantasy this football season. Thrive Fantasy is a daily fantasy sports and esports app for player props. With Thrive, you can eliminate countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Choose 10 out of the 20 available player props to build a lineup. Each prop is assigned a fantasy value for both the over and the under based on how likely it is to hit. You hit the most props and rack up the most points to win a share of the prize pool. And Thrive has over 140,000 guaranteed in prizes for NFL Week 1 and has already awarded over $4 million. Our staff at Fantasy Points will be posting their favorite Thrive Fantasy picks each week on the site. New users can use promo code FANTASYPOINTS when you sign up and will receive a 100% instant first deposit match up to $100. Download Thrive Fantasy on the App Store or Play Store by visiting www.thrivefantasy.com. Tune in to the Extra Points live stream every Sunday morning to find out some of our favorite Thrive Fantasy props for the day. Sign up and prop up today. Tom, a popular tight end on the waiver wire. Let's talk about the Saints tight ends. Because, look, everybody's going to be like, oh my God, Marquez Callaway. Jameis Winston threw 20 passes, Tom. I mean, somebody is going to 20 passes, 5 touchdowns. Somebody is going to lose out on a target share when your quarterback throws 20 passes. But I got a lot of texts, Discord chat even before the game. I know you guys are high on Juwan Johnson. Should I stash him? And I said he is the stash of stashes. But Adam Trautman, Johnson scored 2 touchdowns. Trautman saw more targets. What's your read on this situation?
It's going to be an interesting one here. I think I lean towards Trautman, as being the more consistent overall piece here. He was on the field for, 82% of the snaps last week. And, Juwan Johnson's kind of a situational player, but, he has that Jared Cook type of situational player. So, Juwan Johnson's going to be, kind of like an all or nothing kind of player here going forward. But I do think, all the guy has done is made plays since the preseason. He's come on the field and he was making plays in their first couple preseason games. And then, he makes 2 spectacular. I mean, I don't know if you remember those catches, Joe. I mean, one, he like laid out parallel to the ground, and the other, he like, skied in the back of the end zone and got both of his feet down. So, I mean, they were both impressive plays, and we're talking about the Saints receiving core. I mean, Marquez Callaway's had a nice run of it here since August, but he's an undrafted free agent. He doesn't have a long track record of success in the NFL, and try naming like 3 of their receivers behind him. So it's a really thin group right now behind Alvin Kamara. So I would be taking my shots on either one of these guys to see if, they're not going to throw the ball 20 times a game going forward. Yeah. So there's going to be more volume in the passing game. And maybe both of these guys can carve out, at least some tight end 2 type of value here.
Tom, we're just going to hit one quarterback, and it's going to be Taylor Heinicke. Hopefully you're not streaming quarterbacks at this point, but you might be in the super flex league. You might be in a super flex league. he runs around, he makes plays. I can see why they like him. To me, he is like the quintessential backup quarterback because, you know, you saw that downfield throw to Terry McLaurin. Tom, it looked like it had helium in it. I mean, like the guy just doesn't have arm strength. But he is a quintessential kind of backup quarterback who can run around. He's going to make play. He had 17 yards rushing in that game. I mean, if you're in a super flex league, I think you could do worse than Heineke.
Yeah, he's got some like Case Keenum type of vibes. You know, he's got a you know, a second reaction type of player. You know, he'll run around. You know, he's not going to be like a 50 you know, rushing yards per game type of quarterback. But, you know, he should kind of live in that 20 to 30 yards and maybe he'll get you a rushing score. And
right, the score is what I was saying. Like, you know, he can get in there on, at the goal line for you.
Yeah, yeah. And, they're going to, you know, this week's kind of a tough spot. You know, they're going against the Giants. That's going to be a very low-scoring affair, and it's one they should kind of dominate. It is, you know, we're our first Thursday night game of the year here, so it might be a little bit low-scoring. Might not want to necessarily play him this week, but, you know, it's looking like a 6 to 8 week injury for Fitzpatrick there with his hip dislocation, so... you know, he's going to be the guy here. So he's going to be, you know, a fringe QB2, a high-end QB3, you know, so super flex type of guy. But, you know, he's going to do some things with his feet, that which are, you know, certainly a nice little bonus here.
Yeah. So, Tom, how about the NFL crapping on us already with the Thursday night game week two?
Oh, I know. I mean, the whole – have you seen the whole primetime slate? We got the Lions on Monday night football.
Well, you know, I'm actually a lot more excited to watch that game because the Packers were so freaking bad last week. Like, that has serious meltdown potential, so I'm going to be tuning into that. Chiefs-Ravens is a really good one on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going for. Or we'll put, like, the game of the AFC here in prime time here, and, you know, we'll get some of our, you know, we gotta appease all the, you know, fan bases here, so we'll get some crappy primetime games out of the way early here.
Did you see week three's Thursday night game?
No, I haven't looked that far ahead yet. I think... Go ahead.
Panthers and the Texans.
Okay, I was gonna say, I thought the Texans were pretty early in the season.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, but next Sunday night.
No, it sounds like the NFL is backloading the Thursday night schedule this year.
Yeah, next Sunday night's going to be a real rip snorter, but the primetime schedule, unfortunately for us, Tom, because those are the chances we actually get to sit down and really watch games.
Game. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, so anyway, I hope you guys respect what we do. You know, we have to suffer these terrible primetime games, the games that, you know, we actually want to sit down and watch because on Sundays we're busy, we're working through it and we're discussing it today. I want to remind everybody, check out the Tuesday night live stream for premium subscribers at fantasypoints.com. And if you're a premium subscriber, you get all of our DFS content. You get into our Discord channel. You get all of Tom's betting content. We have an expanded betting package this year. It's just really fantastic stuff. You get access to all of our live streams as well. Tonight's show is the projection show where we are breaking down our rankings and projections live for you. I think this is a meet. John requested this meeting last year, and we were all like burnt out. We were like, oh my God, we don't want to do it. And then turns out, I mean, John knows best. It was a good idea, and we just didn't do it. And
Idea how this is going to go, Joe. It should be pretty fun, though. I'm looking forward. It's going to be more informal. You know, we're not going to,
host it. And
it's not going to be. It's going to be just a discussion, basically. Yeah. So it should be pretty fun. Do we have any promo codes to throw out there? Maybe.
Oh yeah, 21Brawly10.
There we go. Yeah, you want to get in on it.
Look, you might be 1-0. Here's the deal. This is the way I look at it. I don't want to. If you're 0-1, you definitely need help. But if you're 1-0. You want to pull away, man. Like, you know, you don't want to cede that lead. You want to max Verstappen this thing. You want to win by a lot. Go to fantasypoints.com and we'll help you out. For Tom Brawley, at Tom Brawley on Twitter, I'm Joe Dolan, at FG_Dolan on Twitter, and for Edwin Porras as well, at FB Injury Doc on Twitter. This has been the week number 2 Injuries and Waiver Wire podcast. I hope you all enjoyed. I hope you subscribe, rate, and review to make sure you're back with us next week. And we will talk to you then.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.